and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clawton in Washington, D.C.
We brought them to the court because the way, let's say, they are leading that change is completely illegal. It's what we went to the ECOWAS court, and also we went to the national court for that.
A group petitions a court to challenge the new Togolese constitution.
We spell out details of what we can do as the Botswana Congress Party to ensure that we have economic growth that delivers jobs.
The leader of the opposition Botswana Congress Party promises to win the coming presidential election.
Yesterday we had a very successful day with the President of the Republic of Uganda. The traders were given a chance to present their concern to the head of state. Many of the concern was about the multiple taxation or unfair tax regime.
And protesting Ugandan traders reopened their shops following a meeting with President Yoweri Museveni. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Togo, Don't Touch My Constitution, an umbrella group including the opposition and civil society, has launched a legal petition at the National Court to challenge the amendment of the constitution approved by Parliament. Nathaniel Olympiu, the spokesperson of the group, says parliamentarians who approved the new constitution did not have the legal authority to do so. His remarks come after the legislature approved a new constitution that opponents say is a power grab to ensure President Faure Gnassingbe stays in power for years to come. But supporters of the government rejected the criticism, saying the new constitution significantly reduces the powers of the president. For more reaction and the next line of action, I reached Nathaniel Olympiu in the Togolese capital, Lomé.
To start, let me tell you that they refused to hold the election on time without any reason. That is end of last year. And all the deputies who voted for this new constitution did not have the right to do so. In fact, their term was officially over, let's say, since 3 months. But they were kept in office and they voted a brand new constitution. That is completely illegal. Secondly, they didn't publish the content of that constitution. And in that situation, you can understand clearly that Togolese citizens are not happy with that kind of behavior.
I understand some opposition leaders are considering seeking legal redress or going to the court. Is this something that you support?
Yes, we brought them to the court because the way, let's say, they are leading that change is completely illegal. It's what we went to the ECOWAS court, and also we went to the national court for that. And we are expecting that the court will say the law, will say the right, and we are expecting that very strongly.
Some of your critics are saying that you are to blame, the opposition is to blame for not going to parliament, for boycotting the parliament that gave the ruling party a majority in parliament to carry out such an amendment or a new constitution. So you have yourself to blame by not being there at the table when these issues were discussed. How do you respond to that?
Yes, in fact, people who say that they don't know Togolese election procedure, first of all the institutions involved in the electoral process are controlled by the government. Secondly, the people who are called for election are not regularly enrolled on the list because they don't have ID. Nobody knows if they are Togolese citizens or not. So the whole process is not fair at all. And since 1990, all the elections have been contested by the opposition. Due to that fact, we consider in 2018 that it's not necessary to participate in that kind of elections. What I can also add is, even when opposition is in the parliament, they have no way to push a law coming from them, no way to have a proposal from them. So they are just there to, let's say, to sit beside the government with nothing way to influence the law in the parliament. So it's no need to do so, to be in the parliament without any power to do anything for the people.
As it stands now, where does the opposition go from here? You've gone to court. The court has yet to rule. What's next for you?
Yes, we are expecting the court to work on the in compliance of, with the law. That's what we are expecting. But in addition to that, we are going to protest in street also, even though they don't allow us to do so. But we cannot let them behave like that. It's a question of dignity. It's also a question of honor for Togolese citizens. You know, we cannot accept that the same party ruled the country for more than 57 years. They have been ruling the country for 57 years. And the current president is in power for 19 years already. And that's on top of the 30 years his father did just before him. So you can understand that we are very angry about that.
If the court does not rule in your favor, then what?
Then there's no way for us that protest. That's the only way we can express our unhappiness. The Togolese regime, they don't allow citizens to express when they are not happy with the decisions. And the repression is very, very high. But we cannot let things like that. We have to stand up against that. We have to fight those things.
Nathaniel Olympio is the spokesperson for Don't Touch My Constitution, an umbrella group including the opposition and civil society. He spoke with me from the Togolese capital, Lome. The leader of the opposition Botswana Congress Party, or BCP, is promising to win the coming presidential election. Parliamentarian Dumelang Salishandu is also promising to implement measures to improve the living conditions of citizens. His remarks come after officially launching his campaign to contest in the coming October general election. Salishandu is also backed by the party's partner, the Botswana Labour Party. Analysts say he faces a big task in his quest to challenge incumbent President Mokgweetsi Masisi from the governing Botswana Democratic Party, or BDP. To learn more about his vision and plan for Botswana, as well as electoral prospect, I reached Dumelang Salishandu in the capital, Habaroni.
Botswana has had a long history of good economic growth, which unfortunately has not translated into a better life for the majority. We have one of the highest levels of inequality in the country. Poverty remains high, and unemployment has been on the increase. Our proposition is to the nation, as the Botswana Congress Party, is that we have a clear plan anchored around an economy that grows for all or performs for all. We spell out details of what we can do as the Botswana Congress Party to ensure that we have economic growth that delivers jobs and transition from what we've had in the past, which was in essence jobless growth for the economy. And that ultimately resulted in high levels of unemployment accompanied by low wages for those that are in employment.
Dumelang, why should the people of Botswana repose confidence in you to elect you as the next president? Why?
Amongst the presidential candidates who are likely to run in the next election, I have a clear record of service to the nation. Throughout my parliamentary deliberations, I've delivered reforms even around issues of tax that have seen the low-income group getting more in their pocket than was the case before my proposals. Proposals such as removing value-added taxation from basic food commodities, removing value-added tax as a condition for people who are first-time home buyers. I have led a political party that is by far the most stable in the country. We have grown our base as an opposition party over the years. We now have representation in most parts of the country. We are the only party that has come out with candidates more than 12 months before elections so that the voter is able to choose.
Realistically, what do you think your chances are, looking at the fact that the ruling party, led by incumbent President Mokgweetsi Masisi, has dominated Botswana's politics since independence?
We are very much alive to the fact that when you have possibly the longest-serving political party on the African continent, having mastered the art of using incumbency through such things as manipulating public opinion, as they have a control over the state broadcaster, which is the biggest source of information for many in the country. They have control of the Botswana Daily News, which has the largest circulation in the country. It is not an easy task, but we believe that we are ready for it. We have performed well in the recent by-elections where they were filling vacancies occasioned by incumbents who had passed on. And again, it is the first time that the ruling BDP has also been this lax, has also been so slow to take off, even if it has a superior advantage in terms of access to resources. Never before, since the formation of the BDP, has the BDP been without confirmed candidates this late in the day. It has never happened that the BDP would not have its manifesto out this late in the day. They are limping, and we are at our strongest as the Botswana Congress Party. We are happy. We are first to concede that it won't be an easy task, but we believe that the time to bring down the BDP through elections is now.
Do you have confidence about the credibility and transparency of the coming elections?
That has always been a big elephant in the room. The extent many observers have said, though our elections are free, they fail the test of fairness. They fail it on a number of accounts. One that I've referred to, the manipulation of the state broadcaster, and then there are other issues. There are issues such around the credibility of the election itself. The observers, African Union observers, SADC observers, and others have expressed concern about the practice of not counting the ballots where the voting takes place.
Parliamentarian Dumelang Salishandu is leader and presidential candidate of the opposition Botswana Congress Party, or BCP. He spoke with me from the Botswana capital, Habaroni. In Namibia, the General Secretary of the Opposition Independent Patriots for Change, or IPC, says outrage against it expressed by the ruling party SWAPO appears to be propaganda meant to undermine the group's electoral prospect. Christine Esperanza Auchamus also denies that a recent meeting between the IPC presidential candidate and European Union envoys was a secret gathering. Her remarks follow local media reports that ambassadors from Germany, Portugal, Spain, Finland, and France met with Dr. Panduleni Itula, the presidential candidate of the opposition IPC, where they had a discussion about issues in the country. The envoys deny interfering in Namibia's internal affairs. Analysts say the IPC is generating a lot of attention from the youth, which they contend could threaten the dominance of the governing SWAPO party in the coming November general election. Christine Esperanza Auchamus tells me that the ruling party seems to be worried about the growing popularity of the opposition IPC and its presidential candidate.
there's nothing untoward to this encounter because we've had several meetings before. In fact, 2 years ago, earlier on in the year, in 2022, we met the deputy heads of missions of the European Union. We've met with the American ambassador. We've also met with the ambassadors of many, many countries. Now, the meeting with the president of the IPC and the European Union representatives in Namibia was not a clandestine meeting which was held behind closed doors. In fact, the embassy of Germany was first to post onto their social media that they had had this meeting. Why there's such an outcry about this particular incident, I really do not know. We have inquired with several people within the diplomacy space who know how the diplomatic operations function. And many of those that we have spoken to, including local analysts, found nothing untoward with this encounter. So to be honest with you, I have no understanding. I don't understand actually why there's such an outcry about this particular meeting.
Vice President Letumbo Nandi Ndaitwa, who is the country's topmost diplomat, until recently the Deputy Prime Minister as well as the head of your foreign ministry, was quoted as saying the meeting was highly questionable diplomacy. Your reaction to that?
Well, you know, as you rightly say, Meme Netumbo, who is currently our vice president of the country, has got extensive experience in that diplomatic space. And she, of all people, should have known that this is something that is done and practiced across the globe, that ambassadors in the country, in the receiving country, have an obligation to engage politically and to assess the environment in which they operate. We are not the only political party that has met with diplomats in this country. We've had the Relentless People Movement meet with members of the diplomatic corps. We've had the current official opposition leader engaging with members of various embassies on exactly the same thing. Our intention really is to present ourselves as an alternative and as a party that aspires to take over the administration of the country. Well, in any intention and any occasion, if you, for example, apply for a job, what do? You do research on the company that you intend to join. You speak to people who are currently involved in that particular institution that you intend to join. You also speak to previous employees of that particular company so that you can assess, what is this that I'm letting myself into? Is it something I can do? Where should I improve if my intention is to join this company? What is the culture of this company? What are some of the things that I can bring that will better this company? That is exactly the same thing that we are doing as a political party. We've been to various ministries of government. We've been to various state-owned enterprises. We want to understand, how is the state administered? What are some of the things that are working right? And what are some of the areas that require that we do interventions differently to get different results in our preparation to take over the state? And I will tell you that we've done our homework.
But Christine, the SWAPO Party Youth League, the ruling party's youth league, condemned the diplomats for meeting your presidential candidate, basically calling for their expulsion from Namibia, as well as asking the government to declare any foreign missions representatives who seek to interfere in the internal affairs of Namibia, which they are accusing them of doing, persona non grata, without compromise. Your reaction?
Well, the SWAPO Youth League clearly is not understanding how these things function. This country is built on a principle of rule of law. There are laws that govern how international relations should be entered into. Namibia is a sovereign state and it's governed by the rule of law. The SWAPO Youth League as an entity has got no obligation to dictate to the state what they may or may not do. They should be focusing on their on their mandate, which is to ensure that young people who are members of their political party understand the policies and the aspirations of the SWAPO party. There is no reason or no justification for their call. It is immature, it is ill-informed and ill-conceived.
Christine Esperanza Auchamos is the General Secretary of the Opposition Independent Patriots for Change, or IPC. She spoke with me from the Namibian capital, Windhoek.
Like their neurotypical peers, women with autism can learn to live independently, build career, start a business, and more. However, understanding their needs is key to their success. On this week's edition of Our Voices, we will discuss what success means as autistic women and where it should start. Join the conversation on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on The Voice of America.
Zambia's finance minister is expressing confidence that before the end of the year, the administration in Lusaka would have completed debt restructuring talks with both local and international partners. Situmbeko Musokotwani says restructuring the country's debt is necessary to reduce the financial burden on citizens and prevent the government from creating an enabling environment for investments, social interventions, and the creation of jobs for youth to reduce unemployment. The Zambian finance minister is in Washington to attend the spring meetings of the IMF and the World Bank. I had sat down with Situmbeko Musokotwani for an interview. Topics covered include the latest development on Zambia's debt restructuring talks and its government's economic transformation drive. Here is the conclusion of the conversation.
Now, talking about agriculture, obviously, there needs to be industrialization in agriculture and other sectors that will help. So what steps do you think your administration can take to ensure this industrialization success? And how will this help to soften the blow on the ordinary Zambian?
What we have been doing the last 2 years is to adjust taxes, remove taxes on imported equipment and raw materials. That has happened a lot. And within a very short period of time, Zambia, from being a net importer of fertilizers, now we export fertilizers. But also, you've heard us talk about farm blocks. Mm-hmm. Farm block is nothing but a big area of land where you invite big investors to come and do large-scale agriculture production. Along with those small-scale and medium-scale farmers to produce one or two industrial agriculture products, like the way sugar is, okay? So as they produce this agriculture produce, whether it is coffee, whether it is tea, whether it is cotton, whether it is mangoes, oranges, guavas, the whole idea is that this agriculture produce goes into the factories on site, value add, create jobs, and export. We have made progress. We secured money from the World Bank. Right now, we are in the final phases of designing these areas. The interest is phenomenal. The interest from the Gulf, the interest from Europe, people are pushing us, hurry up, we want to come and invest. So these will all be jobs. You can imagine a place like that. There'll be agriculture experts, there'll be engineers, there'll be drivers, there'll be computer experts, there'll be health experts. It will be towns based on agriculture and agriculture value addition, where jobs will be created.
Mm. Before you go, Dr. Musokotwani, talk to me about the promotion of the PPP, the private-public partnership in financing. How will this help the ordinary Zambian? And where are you now at the moment with that policy?
Peter, this is a very exciting area because we did not have money. Having found so much debt, we did not have money to deal with infrastructure that had deteriorated. So we've just simply done what other countries have done when they didn't have money. South Africa, China, Malaysia, European countries, go to the private sector and say, look, we need electrical power. Government has no money. Put up a power plant there. You get paid because the ones who will be buying electricity will pay for it. But where we have done more progress is on the roads. Just last week, the president was launching a road done under PPP, about $40-something million, which connects with Congo DRC. This road was very bad, full of potholes, and the queues to enter Congo were about close to 30 kilometers. And the private sector came. They've done the road in 9 months. The traffic is flowing. The queues have disappeared. And the private sector is happy, making their money. The Zambian publics are happy, driving on the good road. The one we are waiting for now, the jewel in the crown, the highway from the capital, Lusaka, into the mining areas near Congo DRC, a road which is 350 kilometers. All along, it has been single lane. Now it will be double both sides. And the works for that are starting this month, April 2024.
Situmbeko Mosokotwane is Zambia's finance minister. He spoke with me from here in Washington. The executive secretary of the Southern African Development Community, or SADC, says the regional bloc is committed to ensuring peace and political stability in all of its member countries. Elias Mahosi says it is working to implement measures to combat food insecurity following the recent drought that has adversely affected member countries. SADC, Mahosi also tells VOA, that the group is working with international partners to launch a regional humanitarian appeal due to the ongoing drought. In the ongoing effort by the regional bloc to consolidate peace and security in the DRC, Mozambique, as well as what officials say is the progress made in Lesotho and Eswatini, as well as the coming elections in six member states. I had a sit-down with SADC Executive Secretary Elias Mahosi. Here is the conclusion of the conversation.
Mozambique trying to deal with matters of terrorism, and we needed to support the country to make sure that it does not fester into the other parts of the region. And in DRC, is to support the DRC, particularly the eastern part, to make sure that they are able to provide security of the citizens and then make sure that we allow for humanitarian activities to take place. So the government of DRC asked us to support as SADC. We are doing this as SADC because we recognize that the price of losing peace is much more than really trying to bring it back together. And this has been a hallmark as a region to make sure that we maintain peace and security. So we've put in these two missions to make sure that we're able to support, but also to protect the region at a larger level. Obviously, these are not cheap undertakings. They take a lot of our resources. We've lost lives as well in terms of our troops on the ground, but we believe it's a sacrifice that is worth taking, given the much bigger price we might pay if we didn't take these steps. In Mozambique now, we believe we've done enough ground and we are now exiting. The Member State Summit has made a decision for us to exit. By July 15th, we should be out. And Mozambique now has given us assurance, President Nyusi, that they are now ready to support this process beyond our mission.
Let's look at a country or the kingdom of Eswatini.
Yes.
I know SADC has called for a national dialogue.
Yes.
Opponents of the administration appear not to be too pleased with, what they say is a lack of pressure to ensure that this holistic or genuine dialogue happens to ease the political tension in the country. What is the effort to have this achieved?
Yes. For Eswatini, a decision was made that there needs to be a national dialogue process. And this was at the instance of SADC itself, recognizing that there could be differences of understanding between the different players and the government of the day, or the kingdom as it were. Now, we've had these iterations between ourselves and the kingdom. But I think in the last summit, which was last year, just before they went into elections in August, the Kim Swati came to summit and said, you know what, we feel where we are now, we're in a safer space than we were in August of 2023 when we were in Kinshasa, which raised a lot of concerns. And he was pleading to the region to support. He felt last year, August, that they are in a safer place and that they should be allowed to deal with matters internally. And they will now, even beyond the elections, now perhaps consider starting the process of national dialogue. We are still interested as SADC to make sure that the national dialogue process continues. Those recommendations include what they ought to do, including this particular item on national dialogue. And we've engaged with others, the EU, the UNDP, and other international partners who are also supportive of this process, that ultimately the kingdom should engage, as Lesotho did, engage in national dialogue to find a common position for everybody else.
You have top elections coming up.
Yes.
Botswana, where your headquarters is, of course, the powerful South Africa, yes, is also having its national elections. What role will SADC play? I know usually you send poll observers to monitor the elections. What other effort or support will you give to these countries who are organizing elections this year?
Again, drawing from our instruments coming out of the organ, you will understand that it's not the first time that we'll be observing elections. SADC sends out a SADC election observer mission. But before it, there is a very important structure that goes in. This is a structure called the SADC Electoral Advisory Council, and it's made up of judges from the region who go in, assess a country, like you gave example of Botswana. They'll go into Botswana and assess the environment, the political, and they'll talk to all stakeholders. We are not dependent on the member state defining to us who we should meet. No, we decide, and the judges do that. We also look at the past reports where we had last elections for Botswana. It was 2019. So we look at the report and say, what have they done in terms of the recommendations that SADC made? So based on that and the environment on the ground, the SIAC produces this report and they advise the chairperson. In this case, this is Zambia today, President Hichilema. We think we should go in. The country is ready that it can hold election, or we can send in a mission into that. So we observe, we look at three instruments, which is the constitution of the country, the electoral laws of the country, and our own guidelines that determine how elections ought to be run. And based on that, based on the elections, and the observation is done by member states themselves, and then we produce a report which then is shared with the country and other stakeholders as well. So this has sustained us for quite some time, and we use it continually for that. But we urge member state. We don't come with a carrot and stick. We will kindly urge a member state like Botswana, please make sure you implement some of these reforms.
Elias Mahosi is the Executive Secretary of SADC. He spoke with me from here in Washington. Protesting Ugandan traders have reopened their shops and businesses following a meeting with President Yoweri Museveni. Thaddeus Musoke, the leader of the Kampala City Traders Association, or KASITA, says members of the group decided to return to work. This after the president issued a directive suspending penalties against the traders to give room for further consultations. The traders protested against what they say is overtaxation, which they contend is crippling their businesses. Thaddeus Musoke tells me that members of the group are looking forward to the next meeting with President Museveni, scheduled for May 7, to resolve their concerns.
Yesterday, we had a very successful day with the President of the Republic of Uganda. The traders were given a chance to present their concern to the head of state. Mainly the concern was about the multiple taxation or unfair tax regime. This unfair tax regime makes forward decide to comply or to make their tax obligations to be overtaxed. But for instance, like when you're importing anything in this country, the taxes we are so hiked. It's the import duty is around 35% or $3.5 per kilo. So we have engaged the government about this unfair tax regime for almost now 3 years. Unfortunately, you find that they were so reluctant to handle the concerns of the trader.
So following the meeting, the president suspended the taxes, right? So that means there's a likelihood that the situation could be revisited.
Yes, the president suspected the IFRI system because it was, you know, they never gave the business community room for technology adoption. And even the methods used to sensitize our members, it wasn't that effective. Furthermore, the penalties, just imagine when you buy here a bottle of water at around 1,000, and if the machine is faulty and you don't issue that e-receipt, you are charged 6 million Ugandan shillings. So you find that totally it was very abnormal. That's why when we engage the president, he realized that there are gaps which need to be revisited, maybe like on the policy. But we are sure more is going to change because we have tried to champion also to put Parliament on board and other players to, for fairness, to make sure that the business environment in Uganda improves.
Looking at what is happening currently, would you continue to engage the government to resolve this once and for all, in spite of the meeting with the president?
Yes. I think the president committed himself that this month, on 24th, is going to meet the Ministry of Finance and the Uganda Revenue Authority to harmonize our concerns so that next month, on 7th, would have come up with a very final position which can enable the traders trade or carry out their operations at ease. Furthermore, even I promised to make sure that he makes a follow-up on the recovery fund, which was designed to facilitate businesses which faced several challenges during the COVID lockdown, because the government never facilitated effectively the trading community. So we think tomorrow, yesterday's meeting has been a little bit positive.
You said you've been engaging the government for at least 3 years now. Until the meeting with the president, nothing was done. Are you satisfied with your engagement so far, and what are your hopes?
The challenge we had when we are trying to investigate why some of the government officials were a little bit reluctant to intervene. At times, you know, they fear. They fear the big man. So we thought when we rushed to the big man, he can save the trading community. And by then, when we went there with some resolution, like the VAT, he promised they are going to revisit the VAT policy. Secondly, suspended all the penalties and waived off all the penalties which URA had issued to the traders. Thirdly, he stopped manufacturers from distorting the chain of trade. Fourth, he promised to meet the traders on 7th next month to see how more other pending challenges can be handled. Now, like the values, because the values in Uganda have been very unfavorable to the traders. So we think the meeting for the president has a little bit relieved our members.
Thaddeus Musoke is the leader of the Kampala City Traders Association, or KASITA. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. But first, it's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Tunisian side Osborans took its slender 1-0 advantage after the first leg of their CAF Champions League semi-final against South Africa's Mamelodi Sundowns on Saturday night. The pivotal goal came 4 minutes before half-time.
despite Sundowns having several chances to equalize in the second half. The Tunisian side held firm to take a lead into next week's second leg in Pretoria. Sundowns coach Rulani Mokoena, shortly after the match, said his side lost to a better team.
I thought we were brave on the ball. I thought we defended very well. I thought we suffered together in moments when we had to suffer against a very good team.
In the other semi-final, reigning African champions Al Hotli SC will be happy to take a goalless draw to the return leg of the semi-finals after holding five-time champions TP Mazembe to a goalless draw in Lubumbashi on Saturday afternoon. It was a frustrating afternoon for the former champions, who labored for the victory but were held at bay by the defending champions, who will be happy with the results on the road. And now to Kenya, where world 800 meters champion Mary Mora of Kenya clocked 1 minute 57.96 seconds to set a new meet record to bag gold at the fifth edition of the Kipkino Classic, a World Athletics Continental Tour gold meeting in Nairobi on Saturday. The dancing queen, who was aiming to lower her personal best, relegated her main rival, Vivian Kiprotich, who bagged silver in 1 minute 58.93 seconds, as Nelly Chichichiro settled for bronze after timing 1 minute 58.98 seconds. In the men's 3,000 meters steeplechase, Abraham Kibiwot clocked 8 minutes 20.56 seconds to win for the third time. And now to chess. Renowned Nigerian chess master Tunde Onakoya set a new 60-hour Guinness World Record for the longest marathon chess at the Times Square, New York on Saturday. Onakoya embarked on his marathon session hoping to raise $1 million for underprivileged children's education across Africa through the record attempt. The 29-year-old played chess for 60 hours from Wednesday, April 17th to Saturday, April 20th, surpassing the current chess marathon record of 56 hours, 9 minutes and 37 seconds achieved in 2018 by Norwegians Halvard Hug Flatebo and Sjur Fekkingstad. In basketball news, Rwanda's representatives in the 2024 edition of the Basketball Africa League, APR Basketball Club, have signed two NBA G League players ahead of the competition. The new players are Abdullahi Ahmed, an Egyptian center who plays for the Westchester Knicks of the NBA G League, and Obadiah Newell, an American shooting guard who plays for the same team. The Sahara Conference, where APR was placed, will take place from May 4th to the 12th in Dakar, Senegal, where they will battle with clubs including US Monastery of Tunisia, Rivers Hoopers of Nigeria, and AS Douanes of Senegal. And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. And now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. As one of the senior United Nations officials that was obligated to attend meetings of the Security Council, both at consultation and open meetings, usually sitting just whoever is the Secretary General, it is splendid to observe that today is, has emerged a group of foursome, mainly the African delegation and the addition of the colleague from Guyana, who has joined them to form a foursome. The group, Algeria, Guyana, Mozambique, and Sierra Leone, only into the fourth month as Security Council non-permanent members, I'm laying the mark. They are improving the quality of the Security Council debates and discussion. The four countries share a common history and they have shared values. All of them were dependents of imperial colonial states. So they understand the pain of colonialism. And at the time when we are in a period of information warfare, they are the truth seers in the council. Two of them, Algeria and Mozambique, were obliged to wage wars of national liberation. They have a keen insight as to the pain the people of Palestine are feeling. This unique understanding of what troubles the global community has given an added value to the Security Council proceedings. For example, for those who entertain words of national liberation during the 1980s, they find it difficult to understand why members of the Security Council, not all of them, some of them, could not, what motivates the Palestinians to resist occupation, particularly when a number of European Council members know full well that in their own history, they glorified those who resisted for years the occupation of their territories by Germany during the Second World War. They also find it difficult to understand why it is so difficult for some members of the Council to agree that to only condemn Hamas for the capture of detainees or hostages and the request for their release agreed to by all members, why they cannot also empathize with the request that detainees in Israeli jails, who are mainly Palestinians, should also be released. And this is what they try always to do at meetings, to expose, really expose, obscene differences, standards of dealing with situation. Secondly, they want to know why the Council cannot agree with them of the importance of ceasefire to relieve the pain of the Palestinian people. They have also tried to set the tone of the Council. As for example, when this Israeli delegation called for a meeting of the Council after the attack of Iran's Israeli homeland, to agree with the Secretary General to exercise maximum restraint. So this is what has been happening just in 4 months with the African plus Guyanese delegation. This is the wish of so many Africans over the years, that the Africans in the Security Council should cooperate more, consult. Now we have it. The foursome are very strategic in how they ask for the floor to offer the opinion. Full consultation has shown the value of African Arab working together plus their Guyanese companion. But nothing could bother them so much as to what happened last Thursday. Thursday was a landmark day because around 5 p.m. New York time, the Algerian delegation, which had tabled a draft resolution for the admission of Palestine as a full member of the United Nations, asked the president to put it to the vote. And prior to that vote, among diplomats in the corridors of the United Nations, many could not say whether the Arab-African request will garner more than 9 votes. It was on the edge because they were aware of the pressure on member states to vote this way or that way. And the surprise came when it turned out that 12 members of the 15 members of the Security Council raised their hands in support of Palestine's membership. And mind you, among the 12 in favor were from Europe, from Latin America, from Africa and Asia. So it was troublesome that only one veto-wielding member thwarted the aims and hopes of the Palestinian people. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
Today, you are blessed in a special way. Keep pushing, it will all be okay. And life will turn around for you. You don't need to worry every day.
Today. what others already have.
Inside of me, writing love letters, I picked up the paper and pen, playing pretend, read to a mirror, if I didn't like it, I rip and amend, hoping you love me, if your feelings ain't deep enough, maybe you leave as a friend, give us some time, I get on my knees in the end, you are the breeze in my wind, I know you're hurt and you're scarred and I'm trying to protect you away from the evil of men, am I selfish, for trying to just keep it within? Cause you're a free spirit and really don't need to be hinged. You were my voice when I needed to speak. Just look at the places we've been and the people we reached. The trap and the money we made in a week. And sometimes I cannot believe it. You came in my life, a blessing from God. I made you a part of my squad. Then I made you a vow that I keep it real and I promise it's not a facade. But somehow along in the journey you flipped your demeanor for diamonds and cars. You taught me a lot, everything that I know from the drip to the rhyming and bars. Gotta deal with the jealousy. That neighbor that envy me. And when we succeed, we're chilling, we light a cigar. You took me places that I used to dream about. I'm stomping and rocking Adidas now. You gave me dollars and cents if I gave you attention and did it 100%. Life for the party, I'm rocking events. I'm in or out, I'm not on the fence. Stay all on the bench, I'm making the moves. I'm making the moves, we make a team.
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English to Africa service of the Voice of America in Washington.
When I'm trying to keep it just you and me.
Nightline Africa comes to you from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters and engineer the great Justin Thwaite, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, buffaloes are held by ropes, a man by his words. I'm your host, Peter Clote in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Because of that day, I can never forget you. You got my attention and I had to listen, standing in my mama's kitchen. You said I'd be highly successful. You told me, don't worry, because I will connect you. I stood there frozen, astounded in love with the sound of your voice. I thought my mama was playing cassette. It was Grandmaster Flash on a radio deck. The rhymes, the rhythm that made us connect. The move on my heart would have gave you a peck. I ain't even know if you love me back. And the thought in the song was a pain in the neck. Turns